Ron.
In Latin America, the Palestinian cause is seen as more than just politics. It is seen as a deeply important humanitarian issue. Across the region, people have showed up in great numbers in rallies held in solidarity with Palestinians being subjected to Israel's genocidal war on Gaza. Some of the Latin American administrations have also moved ahead of verbal condemnations and took more decisive actions. For instance, Chile's government recalled its ambassador. Bolivia, Argentina, and Mexico severed ties with the regime, and the Honduran government urgently summoned its ambassador for consultations. The resounding support for Palestine from Latin American nations that have had lots of great anti-oppression figures with resistance values like Simon Bolivar, Jose Marti, Fidel Castro, and Che Guevara is not surprising. In this regard, I talked to three Latin American ambassadors to Iran during their visit to the Latin America Cartoon and Caricature exhibition at the Tehran Museum of Contemporary Arts. Venezuela's ambassador to Iran censured the U.S. unwavering support for Israel, blaming Washington's backing for Tel Aviv as the main culprit for prolongation of Israeli onslaught.
La posición primero.
The U.S. is playing an undeniable role in the developments of Gaza. It has supported the regime's aggression against Palestinians and added fuel to the fire. Days ago, it was the U.S. that vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. The U.S. is supporting the Israeli genocide of Palestinians and is contributing to the continuation of this massacre.
The Bolivian ambassador also pointed to the U.S. move to veto a U.N. Security Council resolution that would have called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza.
Unfortunately, we're observing that some international organizations are useless. For instance, a single vote can overturn the decision of the whole world in the UN Security Council. This failed system has led to the prolongation of the Israeli aggression.
Perez Ramos also called on the international community to put an end to the Israeli massacre of civilians.
The Bolivian government, as well as many other nations across the globe, has time and again condemned the Israeli genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. The international community must take more decisive actions to stop the regime's onslaught of Palestinians.
While having an estimated 60,000 Palestinian refugees, including their descendants, in his country, the Brazilian ambassador to Iran refused to directly condemn the U.S.-backed Israeli genocide of Palestinians. He only said it's a pity that the U.S. has blocked efforts to uphold a ceasefire in Gaza.
And we hope the United States will review its position, and we hope Israel also review its position after they see the catastrophe they are doing in Palestine. So I think even hardliners countries will have to be sensitive to the tragedy, what is going on in Palestine.
While the Israeli narrative continues falling apart, the truth has been uncovered for Latin Americans like other people across the globe. That is, Palestinians are the ones subjected to decades of oppression, occupation, and ethnic cleansing.
Israel has for years sought to foster a close relationship with Latin American countries. However, the regime's ongoing onslaught on Palestinians has led to a seismic shift. That is, an exponential surge in anti-Israeli sentiment among Latin American nations. Matia Bosion, Tehran.
Marking Human Rights Day by shedding light on the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime in Gaza and how the international community has failed to uphold what it considers to be a great humanity's achievement. The Foundation of Dialogue and Solidarity of Unified Nations, FODASUN, held its annual International Conference on the Future of Peace and Human Rights in West Asia, as could be expected, focusing on the numerous instances of violations of international law and the Geneva Convention in particular, as Israeli attacks continue in Gaza.
Quite naturally, conference that puts the spotlight on the issue of human rights cannot be indifferent to the developments in Gaza. As we tend to discuss human rights in West Asia, we obviously have to examine how the Universal Declaration of Human Rights affects the lives of human beings in practical measures. What are the consequences when it's not observed? So in a way today, we try to be the voice of the oppressed people in Gaza.
As one of the three pillars of the United Nations, it seems that the human rights is the one mostly neglected compared to peace and security and development.
The fact that there are many unresolved issues that can lead to wars in the West Asia region make it inevitable for us to discuss the issue of human rights violations during wars in this region.
As explained by the participants, the Geneva Convention is therefore considered the most challenging to implement, as the inability of the UN to stop Israeli atrocities and standing up for the people of Gaza has now come to light.
Just because actors violate international law, it doesn't kind of undermine the validity of international law. It just means that we need to work on better enforcement and better accountability mechanisms that we do always better in terms of implementation. Unfortunately, it seems that the 75 years that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights now is in existence, I think we have made progress in some parts, but we have also incurred many setbacks. And all I can hope is that we draw our lessons out of this horrible situation. And that wisdom will prevail and a sustainable solution for peace will prevail.
Established in 2017, the Foundation of Dialogue and Solidarity of Unified Nations attempts to take positive steps in applying the concepts of human rights, particularly in a region where it is mostly overlooked. Fotosun hopes that by shedding light on the shortcomings that exist, it can bring a change for the better.
The participants of the 5th International Conference on the Future of Peace and Human Rights in West Asia believe that so far the international community has not demonstrated the willpower to properly implement the Geneva Convention. And what's happening in Gaza is a clear example of that. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
The streets of the occupied West Bank are empty. Transportation is disrupted while institutions, banks, schools, ministries, businesses and shops are closed as part of a global strike that was declared in protest of Israel's ongoing genocide on the Gaza Strip. Palestinian activists and grassroots organizations have called for the global strike to demand an immediate ceasefire as Israel continues its aggression on Gaza. The call for the strike here has been decided by the National and Islamic Forces, who also called for the Palestinians from all walks of life to rally on this day for the sake of their own people being slaughtered by Israel in Gaza.
The whole world is on strike today. This strike is unprecedented in history. This stresses that all the globe is with the Palestinians. This comprehensive strike that has paralyzed all aspects of life in the occupied territories means the failure of the official level and the Security Council and the international arena to put an end to the Israeli occupation and its aggression.
We believe that it is important to show that there is a solidarity with the Palestinian people and that the world, young people mainly, and the citizens of the world, if you like, if we can say so, are against this war or against this aggression against the Palestinian people and against this genocide.
The protests come only a few days after the United States vetoed the UN Security Council resolution that called for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Protesters here say the strike is also a message to the U.S. administration that stands against the aspirations of the Palestinians. They believe the U.S. is not only preventing an end to this war, but also backing the occupying regime to go on with its genocidal war.
It's also a message to the American administration that has used the veto while 13 countries rejected this aggression. This veto by the American administration gives a green light to Israel to go on and escalate its massacre of our people in Gaza Strip.
For 66 days, the Israeli military continued its onslaught on the blockaded Gaza, killing some 18,000 Palestinians, and wounding nearly 50,000, the majority of whom women and children.
Ending the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip and declaring a permanent ceasefire are today's urgent calls, not only of the Palestinians here in the occupied territories, but also of the free people all over the globe. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
Activists in Seoul, South Korea, continued their campaign to protest Israel's atrocities against Palestinians. As Israel's attacks on Gaza enters its third month, Tel Aviv's indiscriminate killing and illegal tactics are communicated to a growing audience.
Israeli media reported that Israeli forces have created a so-called massacre factory where they're intentionally targeting civilians using AI. And the U.S. is approving this. It's becoming clear that both the U.S. and Israel are war criminals in this genocide.
The killing of prominent Palestinians such as poet Rafat Al-Arir put more names and faces to Israel's crimes. Young people around the world are understanding that the diplomatic protection Israel receives from the United States in its UN Security Council veto costs lives.
When the UN vote concluded, I couldn't believe that they were really concerned about the loss of life. The United Nations should have called for a ceasefire. I am really disappointed that the UN seems like it wants world peace, but then says that such massacres are okay.
South Korea abstained from the most recent UN vote calling for a ceasefire. Still, as some Americans' criticism of Israel is muzzled, protesters in South Korea can say what they mean. As Israel continues its onslaught against the Palestinian people, the subject seems to have declined in prominence in the mainstream media around the globe. These demonstrators here, circling the Israeli embassy week in and week out, seek to remind people that the Israeli army is killing an innocent woman or child every few minutes. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, Iran has managed to foster a close relationship with Latin American nations, particularly those with a history of fighting imperialism and global hegemony led by the U.S., such as Cuba, Venezuela, and Bolivia. In recent years, Iran has managed to increase the scale and scope of its diplomatic and economic ties with Latin American nations. In this regard, Tehran has hosted the first edition of an international conference named 120 Years of Iran-Latin America Relations. The event was held at Tehran University. The organizers said the conference is aimed at reviewing the relations of Latin American countries with Iran and is considered an opportunity for researchers and political analysts to draw a new roadmap for communication and interaction in the future. Attending the event, the Iranian Culture and Islamic Guidance Minister said Iran and Latin American countries have a lot in common.
We seek to expand ties with Latin American nations. Definitely the U.S. and other hegemonic states are against any form of cooperation between like-minded countries. However, we believe that by boosting relations through cultural exchanges, our friendship will be long-lasting.
A number of Latin American ambassadors were present at the conference. They hailed the event as significant, calling for further expansion of ties.
The marking of 120 years of Iran-Latin America relations is a very important event. The main challenge we're facing today is culture. Despite extended political and economic ties between Tehran and Latin American nations, cultural ties require further expansion.
On the sideline of the conference, we asked the new Brazilian ambassador to Iran about the significance of Iran's cooperation with Latin American countries, especially Brazil, through mechanisms such as BRICS.
There will be new mechanisms to facilitate the trade. And in this, if this happens, not only Brazil, but other Latin American countries will have much more opportunity to have trade with Brazil. Last week, I received a big delegation from Brazil to purchase urea fertilizers for Brazil. So, to increase the imports from Iran and to equilibrate a little more the economy. But I think with those businessmen in Brazil, with the high-level visitors in the horizon, and with new inventions of trade without depending on the other countries, I think we will have lots of new opportunities in the future.
Despite the geographical distance and cultural differences, Iran's political and economic relations with Latin American countries have grown warmer in recent years.
The next edition of this cultural event will be hosted by Venezuela in 2024. Matia Pusyan, Tehran.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
From Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The UN General Assembly has overwhelmingly voted in favor of a resolution that calls for an immediate, durable, and sustained humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza. 153 nations voted in favor, which is unprecedented in itself. Similar to the U.S. veto of the UN resolution for a ceasefire, which again the U.S. was left isolated on the world stage. Additionally, U.S. allies like the EU are pushing for sanctions against extreme Israeli settlers in the occupied territories. That, combined with the U.S. impatience with Israel, who said that Israel's genocidal war is contributing to its isolation, which is reflective of a growing split between the two. Let's find out what our guest thinks. Let me introduce them. Larry Johnson is a former CIA analyst who joins us from Bradenton, Florida. John Phoenix, journalist and international relations expert, joins us from London. Larry Johnson, let me first start with you. So you have the UN General Assembly that has voted for a ceasefire. You had 153 nations that voted in favor. And that included also allies like France, Australia, and India, and also Canada. What do you think about this vote where you have so many countries, and even U.S. allies, that are breaking from the U.S. when it comes to the U.S.-Israeli carnage that's happening in the Gaza Strip?
When all is said and done, it's not going to stop the removal of the Palestinians from Gaza, unfortunately. I guess you can appreciate that the growing sentiment against Israel's genocide, because that's what it is creating more PR problems for Israel. But the reality is this: Israel's destroying the hospitals. They are targeting, destroying the schools, targeting and destroying the critical infrastructure for sewage, water, and no food distribution. Nobody can live there. They're making it deliberately unlivable, and the world really is sort of figuratively sitting on its hands, even though it's voting to condemn Israel. They're not steps that could be taken, such as Turkey cutting off the oil supply to Israel. They're not doing that. So I'm a bit frustrated, I guess, with what I'd call the heated rhetoric, which is not being accompanied by actual action.
All right, let me turn to you, if I can, John Phoenix, and ask you about why the world is watching in that atmosphere where, since, for example, Article 99 was invoked by the UN Secretary General, of which the U.S. used its veto, you had about 700 or 800 Palestinians that have been murdered since then. We just had a report where you had some Palestinians that were shot at point-blank range. And you have so many other war crimes that are continuing to happen at a rather alarming pace, I might add, especially after that resolution that the U.S. uses veto power. There should be something that should prevent that. What mechanism is there? What is there that can do that?
Well, I mean, it's clear by looking at the vote, which is 153 countries obviously voted to immediate ceasefire, I was shown one thing. Number one is the main player on the issue is the United States government, especially, obviously, Biden himself. The support of the, I mean, the Israelis will not have a free hand to act in the barbaric manners that way they're acting in Gaza without the umbrella of the United States. And that shows from the vote that the whole country, which is 153, voted immediately for a ceasefire and stop the genocide in Gaza, yet one vote, which is a veto, American veto, okay, blew up the whole picture, which is, means that the United Nations, as other leaders in the past called them reform, it is not really fair that United States will hijack United Nations by just overcome 153 countries' votes. So they need, number one, reform for United Nations. And that is one important thing. Second thing is that the Israelis will not behave like this without knowing that even the call for the International Court of Justice, they should face crime charges. That's not going to happen because the, if you notice, the chief executive of the International Court of Justice, Mr. Khan, visited the Israeli side, and yet he refused to visit Gaza and see the crimes and the barbaric attack on the civilians, the killing of women and children. So they know they were not going to be called for an account. And that, sadly, I had to be open with you. The only way to overcome this issue is to keep the resistance of the Palestinians. You know, we see that in Vietnam. We see that in Afghanistan after 30 years. The American imperialists ran away from Afghanistan. If you want to rely on an institution like United Nations, that's what's not going to happen. Sadly, the continuous resistance by the Palestinians, that's the only way can stop these massacres. Yet, as somebody's going to ask, but they are killing civilians, this is actually a coward, barbaric act by the Zionists. If they wanted really to get rid of Hamas, they should fight Hamas, not bombing schools and hospitals, as your honorable guest just mentioned. Killing, bombing hospitals and schools and sewage, obviously, bombing the clinics, bombing the United Nations, even United Nations schools, which used as a refugee. As the Palestinians sadly believe this would be safe haven, a school with a massive flag of UN. But the Israelis had no regard to anything. You know, the only regard the Israelis do will respect is the resistance. As you see, the language was changed greatly by the Israeli top criminals and the so-called defense ministry about the situation in Gaza.
You know, I'm very tempted to, and I'm going to go ahead and ask you this question, Larry, where if you recall during the Yemen war, where there was a coalition in the beginning, this is a U.S.-backed one, where the Saudi coalition was bombing Yemen for 9 years. Many analysts that we had, not only on this program but elsewhere, they were cited as saying that if this war, if there was a will to stop this war, the United States could do that with one phone call because it started in Washington.
Sure.
I'm very tempted to ask you, and I will ask you the question when it comes to this one, because we see that the U.S. comes out making statements like watch out for civilian casualties, make sure you don't target women and children. But at the same time, there's an endless flow of weapons that goes to Israel, which enables Israel to kill women and children. So I'm trying to get an explanation on that, if you maybe can assist me.
Well, look, the United States is enabling Israel to do this. And if it's halted the shipment of the ammunition, the bombs, the artillery rounds, and told Israel, we're going to cut off your economic aid, the war would stop. But that's not going to happen because the Israeli lobby in the United States under the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, AIPAC, is so strong that Israel enjoys majority support among the Democrats and vast majority, overwhelming majority support among Republicans. So politically, it's just not a feasible option. But that would stop it in a heartbeat. You know, when you observe what happened in Yemen, once China intervened and brokered peace between Iran and Saudi Arabia, that war came to an end, because the entire purpose of that war from the U.S. standpoint was to try to weaken Iran. And the Saudis up to that point had played along. Well, they stopped playing along once with the help of the intervention of China and I believe Russia. And that war stopped in an instant. The killing stopped. The same thing could happen in Palestine, but it's not going to happen because there is no political will to do so in the United States, despite the protests. Yeah, there are some protests and there's some vocal groups, but they don't have enough power or clout or money to shift the policy.
Well, let me see here. John, if I heard you correctly in the last statements that you made, you said that they should come and fight Hamas instead of targeting hospitals, killing civilians, women, children, etc. As recent as just a few days back, you had the Israeli military spokesperson come out and said, we're not too sure if how many Hamas fighters we have actually taken out. If the Israeli military does not know how many Hamas fighters have taken out, they have taken out, then how is it that they're continuing with what you said, targeting civilians, which is obvious when 70% of them are women and children amongst them, if they don't know whether they're progressing or not when it comes to this war?
Well, a whole tactic, and this is also not the first time, even the previous wars in Gaza, the whole tactic that you inflict as much as you can harm and killing and obviously starvation on the population, because they believe the population is the water for the fish. So you get rid of the water, this is Shimon Peres' policy, that if you get rid of the water, then you can catch the fish. What they have, the whole obviously plan is to attack the civilians, cause really, really harm, as you see now for the last 60 days, a true genocide, killing children, women, destroy everything moves, you know. That will actually force, that's what they believe, that's force Hamas to give up. And on the other hand, they told the Gazans, I think 10 days ago, that if you be able to get rid of Sanwar is the leader of militant Hamas in Gaza, we will stop the bombing. So they wanted to throw the ball in the court of the civilians who have got no power to do anything other than just get killed and bury their children. You know, so this is an old and new game to inflict suffering on the civilians, which means that the fighters will be able to give up. And obviously, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. They keep saying, you know, from lie to another, that we killed this, we killed that. We have tunnels. They didn't know where is the tunnels. They didn't know where is Hamas. They didn't know. It's a group. You know that on the militant issue, I could be a normal person at night and day and next hour I'm a militant, you know, with the jeans and a white shirt. They didn't know what they're doing. There's no objective. There's no plan, political plan or military plan. Now they talk about, obviously, the flooding the tunnels with water. Where is the tunnels to flood them? That's, you know, they didn't know where is the tunnels. So far, we didn't know from them how many Hamas they killed, you know, 60 right. days. But we know they killed thousands. They killed nearly 6,000 children, 4,500 women being slaughtered. You know, you talk about nearly 80,000 Palestinians being slaughtered, you know, and maybe nearly half of this, obviously, children. They destroyed the 65% of houses being destroyed. They would have destroyed the whole strip, hoping that the people would move out, and people saying, no, we want to die here. They thought with this intense criminal act, the people will run to Egypt or people will run to the sea. It's not going to happen. But as I said again and again, if they aim to kill Hamas and get rid of Hamas, they should come man to man and fight Hamas, not go in the sky with an F-16 and bombing children midnight. Okay. This is a really barbaric act.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, from there to Larry Johnson to how the U.S. President Joe Biden is warning Israel that it's going to become isolated on the international scene. And it's been described as Biden delivering a rebuke to Netanyahu if it doesn't watch out for the scale of civilian casualties. I mean, that's a mouthful, but how true is it in terms of the way that this is described, a rebuke from Biden? I mean, Israel is isolated at this point. The numbers of Palestinians that have been murdered speak for themselves.
It's meaningless. It means nothing. You know, Netanyahu doesn't care. The only thing that would capture the attention of Netanyahu and the Israelis is if Joe Biden, instead of making some idle threat, you know, some idle criticism like this, if he turned around and said, okay, I'm calling it a halt to all U.S. military flights to Israel, effective immediately, and we're going to suspend foreign assistance to Israel, effective immediately. That would get Netanyahu's attention. He would then care. You know, the reality is, yeah, Israel is more isolated now than it has been at any time in its history, diplomatically, and yet it doesn't care. It's going to pursue this, and its murderous policy against the Palestinians without any regard for their lives. And this is the Zionist vision, and they are pursuing it ruthlessly, and they're going to continue to do it until the Palestinians are forced out of Gaza. You know, so it's not it remains to be seen how long Hamas can continue fighting. They're inflicting a number of casualties on the Israeli occupation force, but you know, Israel still has time on its side, and as long as it is not facing any kind of economic consequences for its actions, it's going to continue doing it.
All right. So, John, this next move by the EU, making an announcement with the EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell, that the EU is mulling sanctions against what they have described as these Israeli settlers in the occupied West Bank for the violence that they're exercising on them. They're very alarmed. The EU is very alarmed that these settlers are exercising violence. I'm not too sure what to make of it when they don't have to look that far to see and get alarmed by the carnage that's taking place in the Gaza Strip. So why would they come out and make this statement in terms of sanctions against settlers and not make a more of a big deal about what's going on with the Palestinians that are getting murdered?
Again, as I want to say that the EU aware of the settlers' activities in West Bank, not today, not yesterday, nearly 30 years. They repeatedly receiving calls and receiving reports of the settlers' attack on the civilians in West Bank. Last year, they attacked the city, or the small town, actually, Hawara. They burned the houses, they burned the cars, they killed people, they injured hundreds of people, and actually was supervised by the Israeli army, you know, because I seen an advert, actually, in Hebrew, telling them when to come, which day, and where to gather. You know, I still have a copy of that. The European Union aware of that. Okay, Joseph Borrell went to visit the border of Israel with Gaza, and he was taking tour by the Israeli officials. They show him that what happened by Hamas, but he will not even dare to think to go to the Palestinian side. And when he was asked on Al Jazeera about the what happened, he was only condemning Hamas. And when he was asked, what about the killing of the Palestinians? He said, well, I'm not an international lawyer, you know, I don't know. So he's one hand a qualified international lawyer to judge that the Palestinians committing by the attack on the 7th of the of October, committing a crime according to the international law. When it's come to the question about the Palestinian, you know, being suffering and killed daily, he said, "I'm not an international law, lawyer." So it is a hypocrisy of the West. They've been watching these crimes for nearly 30 years since Oslo. Expanding a settlement in West Bank, it's never stopped, you know, although they signed in Oslo not to do that. The settlers been actually cutting trees, some of the olive trees, 2,000-3,000 years old. They just chopped them. They attack shepherds, they attack farmers. Yeah. How they now suddenly they wake up and, you know, one morning and said, "Oh, this is wrong. We're going to actually stop these guys coming to our countries. No visas." This is not the action we need to take. The action we take is the dismantle of the settlement, you know, completely, because they are against the international law and occupied land in West Bank. So this is just a PR. And in regard to your very quick comment, in regard to your comment about the question about the Biden attitude toward the civilians, he was told in the beginning of the war how many thousands of people dying. And he said, no, I don't believe the Palestinian story. I don't believe the figures is correct. You know? Now, suddenly, for obviously PR, for election coming soon. We have election coming soon in the state. Yeah, there are lots of pressure by the Americans, which is, I salute the hundreds and thousands of the Americans who went on the street calling for ceasefire. So when we say Americans, we mean the regime in the state.
Sure.
Because a lot of people walked in the street and said, "This enough is enough. This is massacring civilians."
Of course. Well, so it's sad, Larry, to have the political advantages that Biden sees instead of caring for the lives of Palestinians. But there are messages that Biden is receiving, from what we understand, that I'm sure you're also well aware of, in terms of diplomats, American diplomats in West Asia, or Middle East, as some call it, are sending alarming cables to Biden saying, quote, "Israel's military campaign is making the U.S. lose the Arab public for a generation," or "we," quote again, "U.S. are losing badly when it comes to the battle space. U.S. support for Israel is viewed as moral culpability and war crimes." You said Israel is isolated on the international stage. The U.S., by some accounts, may have been isolated, not as much as the Israel, but this has really put that into a high gear, has it?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, look, the position of the United States as an international power is eroding. It is still a powerful country, and the so-called international rules-based order is simply, you know, the United States gets to make up the rules and apply them arbitrarily as it sees fit. That is now being challenged, and it's being actively challenged. So you see the emergence of BRICS, and within this emergence of BRICS, you're seeing a reduction in U.S. authority and influence in the Middle East. But that is not going to save the Palestinians. They are headed towards being extinguished in Gaza. And I want to reemphasize, the only thing that's going to stop that is tangible action by countries that control the purse strings, the oil, things that Israel needs. And if nothing else, to try to impose a blockade on them.
Since you mentioned oil, my last question goes to you, John Phoenix. A front that Israel did not expect for it to reach the stage that it seems to be going to, and that is the front with Yemen. The Ansarullah movement and the Yemeni army have targeted vessels that are either originated from Israel, affiliated with Israel, or anything that has to deal with Israel, any vessel and any tanker. Do you think that will prove to be effective? In 1 minute, please, or less.
Yes, that is also proof that your guest is completely right. The minute the Israelis feel that there is no oil, there is no gas, no trade with the outside world, they be threatened the way our Yemeni brothers actually acting on the Bible Mandate, you know, the Red Sea. I think this is a very, very effective tool in order to pressure the Israelis.
Very well. Thank you so much. We do appreciate it. Let me thank our guest, Larry Johnson, former CIA analyst from Bradenton, Florida. Thank you for your comments. And John Phoenix, thank you, journalist and international relations expert from London. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitale and the team, it's goodbye.
Take pieces of bread from me, and your soul will never be broken. And if I am your haven, you will never be homeless. One whose cloak is me will never be naked. And one whose resort is me will never be destitute. God is above all powers. IRIB English Radio.
In the Limelight.
Russia's foreign ministry has reiterated that Moscow will not allow Ukraine to be a Nazi state and pose a threat to both Russia and other countries. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has covered this story and tells us more. Russia has said any further military aid by the United States to Ukraine will be a fiasco. Ahead of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's meeting with U.S. leaders, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Russia would very closely follow Kiev-related developments in Washington. Dmitry Peskov told a regular news briefing, "It is important for everyone to understand that the tens of billions of dollars pumped into Ukraine did not help it gain any success on the battlefield." Peskov added, "The tens of billions of dollars that Ukraine wants to be pumped with are also headed for the same fiasco." Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who has already received more than $100 billion worth of American military aid, is currently in the U.S. capital, Washington, to plead for more aid. And he met and conferred with U.S. President Joe Biden on Tuesday, 12th of December. The Ukrainian leader also met with congressional leaders from both political parties, Democratic and Republican. Political analysts said Zelensky faces his real challenge when he addresses U.S. senators in Congress and met the new Republican Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. On Monday, 11th of December, speaking to the audience at the National Defense University in Washington, the actor-turned-politician, Volodymyr Zelensky, claimed Russian President Vladimir Putin must lose. He said U.S.-led Western countries must not delay the continued delivery of arms and munitions to Kiev. Zelensky asked the American leaders not to betray Ukrainian forces fighting against Russia. Since Russia launched its special military operation in Donbass in February of 2022, the United States has led a Western coalition sending tens of billions of dollars worth of weaponry and munitions to Kiev. However, Republicans are ever more openly rejecting allocating more funding for the continuous arms and munitions shipments to Ukraine, seeing their support for Ukraine as their loss and a distraction from domestic problems at home. Republican lawmakers have pointed to Kiev's failure in winning the proxy war against Russia, insisting that funding the abortive Ukrainian war is a waste of U.S. taxpayers' money. The lawmakers want President Biden to redirect U.S. taxpayer money towards domestic issues, particularly stopping illegal immigration along the U.S.-Mexico border. While Russia announced on Tuesday, 12th of December, that Russian troops had advanced significantly in southern Ukraine. Earlier, Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu pointed out that Kiev forces continued to push for victory on the battlefield against the superior Russian troops. He said, "This is plunging Ukraine into an abysmal self-annihilation." Russia has on numerous occasions warned that the continued supply of Western weaponry and munitions to Kiev would only prolong the war, adding to losses and exacerbating the suffering of the Ukrainian people. The Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu added, "The United States and its allies continue to arm the Ukrainian forces, while the Kiev regime continues to throw untrained soldiers into senseless assault and slaughter." Shoigu added, "These cynical actions by the West and their henchmen in Kiev are only pushing Ukraine towards self-destruction." The Russian President Vladimir Putin also stated on repeated occasions that the military campaign in Donbas was necessary to defend the people against Western aggression and its expansionist policy. The Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has made similar remarks in the past, saying Kiev is fully aware of Russia's demands and could simply fulfill them by bringing the war to an end. Sergei Lavrov said, "Our proposals for the demilitarization and denazification of the territories controlled by Kiev and the elimination of threats to Russia's security emanating from there, including our new lands, are well known to the enemy." Sergei Lavrov added, "The point is simple, fulfill them for your own good. Otherwise, the issue will be decided by the Russian army." The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. An emergency spending bill to provide billions of dollars in new assistance for wars has been blocked in the U.S. Senate as lawmakers seek to drop Ukraine from the aid package, which also includes Israel. The package would include roughly $60 billion of help for Ukraine, keeping up pressure on Russia, and more than $10 billion for the ongoing Israeli aggression against Palestinians of the Gaza Strip. The package also includes some aid for Taiwan. The emergency spending bill included $20 billion for border security. The vote was 49 in favor and 51 against, leaving the $110.5 billion measure short of the 60 votes needed in the 100-member Senate to pave the way to starting a debate. The Republicans in the Senate blocked the White House's request for new aid, despite last-minute appeals by President Joe Biden. Republicans contend that they want more accountability than they are getting from the Biden administration for U.S. taxpayer money that goes to Ukraine. If the negotiations over the legislation do not produce results in the coming days, the bill could be delayed until after the Christmas holidays. Some senators are proposing working through the Christmas holiday to reach a compromise. However, if the bill passes the Senate, it will still needs to be approved in the Republican-majority U.S. House of Representatives, where dozens of Republicans voted against further aid to Ukraine. In the Republican-led House, Speaker Mike Johnson has made it clear he will not agree to spending any more money for the war in Ukraine. President Biden has led the coalition back in Kiev, but support has been waning among Republicans in Congress, and the administration has warned that it will run out of money for more aid for Ukraine in the weeks ahead. President Biden spoke with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and the leaders of G7 nations on Wednesday, 6th of December, to discuss how to shore up Western aid for Kiev. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky warned Western leaders that Moscow was counting on Western unity to collapse and said Russia has ramped up pressure on the front lines of the war. But the precarious prospects of aid package for Ukraine has been clear since a classified Ukraine briefing for senators on Tuesday, 5th of December, that saw several Republican senators walk out of the session.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.